The FBI has raided the headquarters of one of the nation's largest operators of psychiatric hospitals.
Hundreds complained of overbilling, misdiagnosed conditions, and insurance fraud.
Investigators say they found more than 5,000 similar cases in all 50 states.
Psychiatrists clearly are getting rich.
Psychiatrists traded drugs for sex, filed false insurance claims, and exploited patients sexually.
We have uncovered some of the most elaborate, aggressive, creative, deceptive, immoral, and illegal schemes being used to fill empty hospital beds with insured and paying patients.
A new psychological study from the National Institute of Mental Health.
Just this morning, along with his longtime psychiatrist.
The circle of depression is growing wider, broader.
15% of women suffer from this disorder.
Affecting over 20 million Americans.
Changes that have occurred in the brain.
Abnormalities in the neurotransmitters.
Is that a chemical imbalance?
You've got a problem, and they've got a drug.
8 million American kids take prescribed medication.
Children need psychiatric care.
But what if the criminal is mentally ill?
It's a punishment, a form of aversion therapy.
Tenyon appears on the show, but I want to feel
seasonal affective disorder.
OCD.
Oppositional defiant disorder.
Schools criticized for
overprescription.
Everywhere you look, there it is. Think psychiatry has nothing to do with you? Think again. The whole field of psychiatry has gotten into every facet of your life.
They basically believe that everyone is mentally ill.
You smoke too much, it's a disease. You're too unhappy, it's a disease. You're too thin, it's a disease. You're too fat, it's a disease.
Where are these coming from? These are coming from the minds of psychiatrists that are dreaming these things up, writing papers and getting published with their names on it, calling, creating these new diseases.
First he said that I had ADD, then he said that I was depressed, then he said I might be bipolar, but I don't have ADD anymore.
And he said, you know, I've been noticing you, and I wonder if you have it too.
What they decided is that both my husband and my son had a chemical imbalance that needed to be corrected with a chemical balancer.
There is not one shred of credible evidence that any respectable scientist would consider valid, demonstrating that anything that psychiatrists call mental illness are brain diseases or biochemical imbalances. It's all fraud.
There's no reliability of diagnosis, and there is no science. It's just pseudoscience. It's pretend science.
This is one of the most open secrets in all of America in the psychiatric field, that nothing is being done that's legitimate, and they're billing for it.
From 1967 to 1987, the Soviet government arrested over 2 million people who, for political reasons, were diagnosed as mentally sick and were forced to undergo psychiatric treatment. Even today, psychiatry remains the coercive tool of choice for governments throughout the world.
What we've learned is that in Gitmo or Guantanamo Bay, that we had teams of healthcare professionals called the biscuit teams, behavioral scientists, psychologists, working with the military to advise them on how far you could push a prisoner. There are abuses that have been documented around the world. We have healthcare professionals who have committed acts of treason within their medical ethics. And there's nobody supervising that. There's nobody making them stand accountable to their medical ethics.
Whether it's depression, anxiety, what have you.
The chemical imbalance is for the benefit of the psychiatrist. It has to be there so the psychiatrist can treat it.
But fraudulent chemical imbalance theories could not hide the mounting evidence of common and terrifying side effects, such as akathisia.
Akathisia is like an extreme nervous, inner nervous agitation. People describe it as wanting to crawl out of their own skins. And this happens with great frequency, and it is absolutely, totally well understood to be associated with suicide and violence and homicide.
After years of these reported side effects and cases upon cases of violence, self-mutilation, and death, in 1991, health experts, legislators, and the public finally forced the FDA to order an investigation.
I know with absolute certainty that if Charles had any idea of the side effects of Prozac, he would never have taken it.
I had two sons, David Lee, age 8, Billy 16.
wife 20 years all gone. I'll tell you why. After being on Prozac for 21 days, my wife shot and killed both of these two boys right here. She turned the gun to herself and shot herself twice.
I took the 9mm automatic, sat down on the bed, and put the gun to my head. And I blew a 4-inch hole out the back of my arm instead of my head. Thank God I was a lousy shot. Had someone looked further into Prozac, steps could have been taken to avoid it.
What was supposed to be an unbiased hearing was a panel of psychiatrists, the vast majority with personal financial ties to pharmaceutical companies. The prisoners physically mistreated with electroshock are well publicized. The amount of voltage doled out by psychiatrists for ECT is up to 33 times greater. And that damage is most often targeted at the most vulnerable. 2/3 of those who receive electroshock are women. Given such diagnoses as premenstrual syndrome, menopausal disorder, or postpartum depression. Half of electroshock patients are elderly. Once they become eligible for government health care at age 65, twice as many American seniors receive ECT than at age 64. And what does this all add up to? 100,000 dead and countless others so brain damaged they have no hope of ever recovering a normal life. For a total of $12 worth of electricity, psychiatrists in the United States alone rake in $1.2 billion. But the next miracle cure psychiatrists added to their arsenal made them more money than ever before.
For a long time, or sometimes they're permanent. So that's very clear, very well recognized, long-term or permanent brain damage from these medications.
Mr. Blount has virtually no signs of his original illness now. The signs that the movements of his mouth are completely side effects of the drugs that he was on for 20 years. Mr. Blount is quite rational. He understands what's going on. And if you're patient, he can carry on a very rational conversation with you.
Even when you remove the drug, it may still remain. It means you have caused a permanent disabling of the brain. In the late 50s, you get the first signs of it, people starting to worry about it. But it's not until the late 70s that psychiatrists start warning their patients about it, 20 years.
Thorazine's manufacturer, SmithKline French, had good reason to keep a lid on the bad news. In the first year alone, SKF saw a more than 500% return on their original investment. With the public and the press kept in the dark about the severe and disabling side effects, prominent doctors and psychiatrists met in Puerto Rico to lay the groundwork for the expansion of psychiatric drugs far into the future. Psychiatrist Dr. Nathan Klein wrote this in the conference's final report.
The present breadth of drug use may be almost trivial when we compare it to the possible number of chemical substances that will be available for the control of selective aspects of man's life in the year 2000.
But nothing acted upon. When a psychiatrist has a patient, a female patient, and abuses them sexually, there's a very high probability they'll get away with it.
I've seen many cases where the mental health professional becomes very disturbed and is using very strange and odd treatments. And that can go on for many years with no one finding out about it because it's not very public. It's quite private. Things happen behind closed doors.
Tragically, their sex crimes often involve children. Case in point, Dr. C. Markham Berry. On the surface, a well-respected member of his community. But all that shattered when he was arrested on child molestation charges. Van loads of child pornography were removed from his home, and the subsequent investigation uncovered his sexual abuse of former patients, boys aged 7 to 17, who he photographed and sodomized. All part of what the state called 50 years of Berry's rampant, undetected sexual escapades with children. This is not an isolated incident. It is the carefully masked character of many members of this profession. In every country throughout the world, you could well find psychiatrists committing rape, sexual abuse, murder, and fraud. And as you will see, psychiatry's entire credibility depends on the biggest fraud of all.
This is a motivated behavior. If you implant enough memories of specific kinds,
you can shape and change the nature of human thinking and feelings.
And it was thought to be a kind of ultimate weapon, because what greater weapon could there be than control of the human mind?
You can control minds, and you can move people around, particularly when you control their lives. It's easier to control their minds.
When we look at psychiatry and psychology, social control is the primary agenda.
And that agenda manifests in another way throughout the world right now, with mental health screening campaigns fed to the public under such innocuous sounding names as Teen Screen.
The national government is actually encouraging it and wanting to test every single kid in our public school system.
All children are put under this kind of a test for psychiatric evaluation, a 10-minute test that tells them absolutely nothing.
I predict that upwards of 90% of all the people screened will be diagnosed as having a psychiatric disorder, which means that we'll have an entire generation that will be a perfect profit center.
Psychiatrists claim that over 1 billion of the world's population is mentally ill. In the past 35 years, the number of people taking psychiatric drugs has more than tripled to over 120 million users today. And right now, they drug 20 million school children with stimulants and other psychotropic drugs. When recently asked about the scientific basis of their profession, those psychiatrists willing to be interviewed offered nothing but excuses.
Psychiatric illness is not really an illness.
How do you evaluate if someone is cured or sick?
Cure is certainly something we look forward to, and we have no earthly idea how to accomplish.
We're not good at causes. We don't know what causes mental illness.
But that hasn't stopped them from pronouncing themselves mental health experts and treating people against their will. And the results are self-evident.
This psychiatrist, man who's supposed to work to heal people, has done nothing but destroy this man's life, and in destroying his life, destroying the lives of all of his loved ones. Excuse me.
They've damaged and ruined my son, and they've trapped him in a system.
The way that they treated him and made him feel like he was worthless.
Ryan was being kept dumb and high on Ritalin so that they could make $2,500 per month.
He gave me Valium, and I got addicted to it.
It wiped out my life.
My life has been ruined.
Incredibly enough, while presenting the DSM to the world as scientific fact, psychiatrists freely admit its utter lack of science.
We have no diagnostic reliable markers for almost any illness there is in the DSM.
What we're testing for in psychiatry, it's hard to say because there's nothing specifically.
But as far as a test that's clinically useful, you know, basically, we're not there yet.
We don't have any laboratory tests that we can use to determine whether somebody does or doesn't have a mental illness.
There are no good biological tests for detecting mental illness.
There is no test, there's no biopsy you can do.
There is no chemical test right now.
There are no specific tests to confirm the diagnosis or show the improvement, like any blood tests or any x-rays or anything like that.
Oh, in my practice, I don't do any tests. I just speak with people and listen to them, and then I make a decision in what kind of illness.
These diagnoses vary as widely as the psychiatrists who make them. In this hidden camera footage, a person visited several different psychiatrists complaining of the same symptoms.
I'm extremely unorganized, and I didn't used to be. It's caused problems in the family. It's caused problems getting, you know, I'm self-employed.
You got ADD, ADHD, and you're depressed, and your depression is bipolar depressed.
You have a brain chemistry disorder that's probably genetic.
You have a lot of the symptoms of depression.
So it seems like it is a mixed picture. What that means is like we
had shot up to 6 million. Today, 20 million children worldwide are labeled with some form of mental disorder, a diagnosis often made in a matter of minutes.
We would sit behind a two-way mirror
along with the parents. We would then look at the child. We would like do small manipulative activities with them to see where their deficit was. It was wrong what we were doing. We were looking at a 5-minute glimpse of this child's life and saying, okay, here you go. Here's a little pill, take it, you'll be fine.
Those little pills like Ritalin, Adderall, and Concerta are classified by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration as highly addictive substances, right along with cocaine, opium, and methamphetamine.
When I was on the Ritalin, it made me just feel like totally different, like I wasn't even who I was.
I was, you know, flipping out, twitching, you know, going crazy.
I felt like I was out of it all the time, like I wasn't there. I wasn't human.
You're just a zombie, pretty much. Not, you know, you do what you can just to get by and just don't do anything extra.
My mother never teased me, but she thought I really had ADHD and I was wrong and had something wrong with me. So I thought she'd feel bad and feel sorry for me if I died. But then again, I thought that she would miss me a lot, and I also love her a little more than I wanted to kill myself. And so I stopped when I realized that.
The abundance of prescription medications created a new income source for kids, selling their meds to their schoolmates.
It's called kiddie cocaine. They take the Ritalin and they just repackage it and they sell it on campus to the kids because it's like speed.
Today, almost 10% of all American teens, some 2.1 million, abuse Ritalin and another psychiatric stimulant, Adderall. And these drugs can also lead to even more harmful substance abuse.
I figured that if I was going to do drugs, I might as well make it worth it. And I ended up doing street drugs, and then I ended up getting into it really bad.
We're looking at marijuana and other things as being gateway drugs, and actually the so-called medications are a greater gateway drug.
The Ritalin drugs are backfiring big time, because if the child is already disruptive and he takes cocaine, he's going to be a lot more disruptive after he's taken it. It is not going to calm him down.
Boom, she got on the drugs and her personality changed, her behaviors changed, it became erratic and dark and violent, and it was just a nightmare.
He kept having adverse reactions, becoming very, very angry. He could not control his behavior, he couldn't control his temper.
He was on 5 different psych meds, Prozac and lithium, and he was 7 years old. And he was unable to function. He would have rages and then crying and all kinds of just violent rages, grabbing knives and all of this.
The list includes 15-year-old Kip Kinkle withdrawing from Prozac when he shot 22 classmates, killing 2, after murdering his mother and stepfather at his home in Springfield, Oregon. 18-year-old Jason Hoffman on Effexor and Celexa, and he opened fire at his California high school, wounding 5. 15-year-old Sean Cooper on a mix of antidepressants when he shot students in Idaho. And 17-year-old Eric Harris on Luvox when he and partner Dylan Klebold killed 12 classmates and a teacher in the bloodiest school massacre yet, Columbine.
And all of this overshadows the very reason children came to school in the first place, to get an education. Since 1970, the United States has fallen from 9th to 23rd place in worldwide academic standing. While during that same period, the number of American school children labeled with learning, behavioral, and mental disorders skyrocketed, and the sales of ADHD drugs has multiplied 310 times.
Children don't ask for psychiatric drugs. Children don't ask to be diagnosed. They don't want to be called crazy. So you ask to ask the classic Roman question, legal question, cui bono, who benefits? The people who make the diagnosis.